Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Drug addiction is a serious problem in many of our Native communities, and long-term drug abuse can create serious health problems. Injecting drugs also has the added danger of spreading HIV, hepatitis C, and other diseases when sharing needles is involved. But with needle exchange programs in 34 states created to stop the spread of disease, are we enabling addicts to keep using? That's our discussion today. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the news.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Otto, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Sexual assault survivors and tribal agencies that advocate on their behalf gathered at the state capitol in Oklahoma City last week to share their stories of sexual violence in Indian Country. KGOU's Jacob McClellan reports advocates sought the attention of state legislators because many Native women are victimized in state jurisdiction.
The Violence Against Women Act is slowly being implemented in Indian Country. Kevin Washburn is the Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs at the Department of the Interior. He's taking part in a conference in Rapid City on the new act. Washburn says many tribes are now in the early stages of enforcing this new law.
What we have found over time is that the more authority tribes have to take care of their communities, the better those communities are taken care of. When we can empower tribes, they do a great job.
Each tribe has the option of keeping the status quo or taking on the new authority. Carmen O'Leary is director for the Native Women's Society of the Great Plains. She says many tribes are exercising their sovereignty.
I think that tribal leaders, they do want to protect the welfare of their people, and so this is just one more tool in the toolbox, and I know as they can, they will be implementing it.
The Crow Creek Sioux tribe is among those taking on this new jurisdiction. Tribal chairwoman Roxanne Sazu says the effort to end violence against women is not something tribes have to do all on their own.
We need to work together, the tribes along with the state, in order to ensure the safety of Native women and all women.
While the act is being implemented in many tribal nations, officials point out that hurdles remain. They include a lack of resources and funding for tribal law enforcement. I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Industrial hemp farming may be returning to the Pine Ridge Reservation. In 1998, the Oglala Sioux tribe legalized hemp with a requirement that the plants have low level of THC, the active compound found in marijuana. But when Oglala Sioux tribal member Alex Whiteplume planted hemp on his land, it was raided by DEA agents. Charles Michael Ray reports, now that the federal government is loosening restrictions on tribes who want to grow marijuana, Whiteplume is eager to start planting again.
Right now, Alex Whiteplume faces a restraining order keeping him from planting industrial hemp on his Pine Ridge farm. That order came as part of a court settlement following DEA raids of his hemp crop between 2000 and 2002.
We didn't want to go to jail, so we never collected any seeds. We just stood idly by and watched the seeds fall on the ground. And so we're just starting fresh with zero seeds.
Whiteplume says his attorneys are working to see the restraining order lifted, given the federal government's new stance on tribes who want to grow marijuana. Whiteplume says he believes industrial hemp farming could be a culturally and environmentally appropriate form of economic development.
Now we're finally at a point where we can really exercise our right, and maybe we'll see some money as the outcome. Could be a thing that we could be an example for around the world, where you could use the hemp for local cottage industry, just for the families that live on their land.
Whiteplume says he approves the federal guidelines that have been laid out for any tribes who want to grow and sell cannabis as a drug. The president of the Oglala Sioux tribe, John Yellowbird Steele, says he supports industrial hemp on Pine Ridge, but not marijuana. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
In January, Pope Francis announced he would bestow sainthood on Junipero Serra, a Franciscan friar who founded nearly half of California's Catholic missions. However, the announcement was met with condemnation and protest by tribal members in the state who called Serra a monster responsible for brutalizing indigenous people while stripping them of their tribal identities, cultures, and religions. Those protests were repeated again on Easter Sunday as nearly 200 demonstrators descended on the Carmel Mission in Carmel, California, where Junipero Serra is buried. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. We've all heard the famous phrase, just say no, when it comes to drugs. But the reality is that drug addiction exists. It's estimated that more than 2 million people in the U.S. have problems with narcotics. And drug abuse comes with a host of health problems, even death. But some communities are trying to reduce the amount of harm that drugs cause. Last month, a reserve in Canada started distributing kits containing a drug called naloxone or Narcan. It's used to stop opioid overdoses. Also, last month, the governor of Indiana, Mike Pence, declared a public health emergency because of a spike in HIV infections directly related to IV drug use. He signed an order to temporarily lift the ban on needle exchanges. What about in your neck of the woods? Would you stand for these approaches to combat disease and prevent an overdose? And are you in favor of your tax dollars going towards providing clean needles or drugs to help with an overdose? And do needle exchanges enable addicts? Or do we need to start rethinking how we deal with addiction? Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Alberta, Canada, is Dr. Esther Tailfeathers. She is a family and emergency room doctor, and Dr. Tailfeathers is a member of the Blood Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Tailfeathers.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for being with us on this important topic. And Dr. Tailfeathers, your community recently held a training to detect the signs of a drug overdose, also to administer the drug naloxone. Please do tell us about the need to start this program and what is going on.
Okay, our reserve has experienced a huge escalation in the use of what's a street drug that they call Oxy-80, but it's actually fentanyl, which is a very potent narcotic. And the community has experienced 18 to 20 deaths over the last 6 to 8 months, secondary to overdosing with the fentanyl. So we had to institute some desperate measures to try to save lives because, as you know, the more people we lose, the more trauma there is in the community. And so our community is just reeling with grief, and many families have left young children without parents. We've had four families where, and just recently, both mother and father died of an overdose and left four children. So we have to do something about saving lives in our community because the impact is incredible when you look at the fallout from that. So we started up a Narcan program. We were able to get provincial help from Alberta Health Services as well as from the federal government, Health Canada, who helped us or who had purchased the, the Narcan kits or the naloxone kits and sent them down here. So what we've done is we've instituted a program along with partnering with Lethbridge HIV. It's called Train the Trainer. So we have started training people on how to use the Narcan kits, and those people that have been trained to use the kits will be not required to, but will be called on to train other people to use the Narcan.
So Dr. Tailfeathers, your community is definitely taking the approach of, you know, becoming aware of this and also, preventing, you know, more people from dying from an overdose. Dr. Tailfeathers, you know, how was this received in the community? Were folks ready to learn, or was there any kind of pushback?
Initially, when we started discussing using the Narcan kits or the naloxone kits, there was this question about enabling the drug users to continue, but there's been so many deaths that people had no question anymore about it. If you have the ability to save a life and you save a family member or a loved one, the consequences are definitely different than standing there and, you know, not being able to do anything about the overdose. And many of our people were not saved in the last, you know, half hour or so of their life, and they probably could have been. So for our community, it was no longer a question because there's so many loved ones that we've lost.
And Dr. Tailfeathers, I know a lot of people want to, you know, get more understanding, especially when you're starting to see the numbers rise. Especially it becomes alarming when, you know, you're losing people from the community. And Dr. Tailfeathers, is there any knowledge as to why there's an uptick in this or even where the drugs are coming from?
The drugs are coming from larger urban centers, Calgary, British Columbia, Edmonton and Medicine Hat, and I'm not sure where the original source of the fentanyl is coming from. I hope they find that soon. But it quickly became an epidemic on our reserve because people were naive about the potency of the drug, because they went from some people using crack cocaine to using the fentanyl, and the people that are producing the fentanyl are not measuring at all what they're putting in. So there could be 10 mics of fentanyl in one tab and 100 mics of fentanyl in another. And so there's just no way of knowing what is in those tabs. And most people are snorting them. They're not shooting them up. But what we're expecting is that the use of these drugs, or the way that they're being used, will escalate from snorting them or inhaling them to injecting them. So we're trying to work at both ends of this. We're working at community education and prevention, and also at saving lives.
All right, thanks for that, Dr. Tailfeathers. With us today, we have Dr. Esther Tailfeathers. She comes to us from the Blood Tribe in Canada. She is a family and emergency room doctor, and she's here with us today as we talk about harm reduction. And we want to know, is this something that you are dealing with in your community? Does it sound similar? And what is the community doing to keep your community safe as well as saving lives? And what do you think about introducing another form and even training community members to give naloxone as a way to save lives when somebody is having an overdose? We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Dr. Tailfeathers, as you train more people, what kind of reaction are they having? Are they surprised that, you know, this drug can help people and save their life so easily?
Yeah, I think that number one, they're afraid of having the kits themselves because they're afraid of having to administer them. But they've seen how it works. We had two lives saved last week in a parking lot, and so people are feeling more empowered in terms of being able to save lives of loved ones. But it's becoming more common, and with the education in the community, there's a lot less fear. And we are having a lot of community members stepping forward and saying they want the kits in their homes because they have loved ones that are so addicted. They've tried everything but can't get them free of this addiction.
And Dr. Tailfeathers, is that one of the hardest things, you know, when you are trying to work, you know, in the prevention arena? It is, you know, people who are afraid of, well, if I go for this kit, then everyone's going to know, especially in a small community. Are we also fighting against, you know, that stigma of shame?
Yes, there is definitely a stigma because many people are wanting to be trained privately and have the kits in their homes. But we do have one community which is experienced most of the deaths, and we are working on getting people to put signs in their windows saying they have the kit in their home, just in case it's not available in the home that there's an overdose. We also have a what's called foot patrol, so we have a group of people that are patrolling the community on foot, and they all have a naloxone or Narcan kit in their backpack, and the people in the community are aware of that. So we're just trying to cover all our bases in terms of having it available and teaching people about how to use it. And then, like I said, we're working at the other end in terms of trying to get these people to treatment and helping them to understand that this drug is so highly addictive that it's compared to heroin. And so we're trying to get people to not start using it, and we're trying to clean the community of the dealers.
All right, thanks for that, Dr. Tailfeathers. And, you know, is this something that people are afraid to talk about in your community? Has being ashamed to talk about this led to a death in your family, maybe even your own neighborhood? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Tell us how, you know, this affects you and your community. 1-800-996-2848. And if you have questions, you can call in. We have a doctor on the line. We're also going to hear from more folks who are working on this issue in communities. And if you'd like to, you know, throw a question out there, if you heard about this but you want to know more, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And did you know that naloxone is a drug that helps people who are having an overdose from an opioid? What do you think about that? Is this the first time you're hearing about that? Do you wish that more health officials in your community were talking about this or telling people about it? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We want to hear from you. And joining us now from New York City, New York, is Daniel Raymond. He is the policy director for the Harm Reduction Coalition. We'd like to go ahead and welcome Daniel to the hour. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, and thank you for having me today.
And Daniel, thank you for being with us. And Dr. Tailfeathers mentioned the words harm reduction. Let's talk a little bit about that. Just exactly what is it?
Sure. We see harm reduction as a strategy to address the health consequences of substance use. As we're working on our prevention, as we're working on our treatment and recovery, there are a lot of issues that put people at risk when they're using drugs, and we have some strategies that can prevent some of these, such as using naloxone to reverse an overdose. So harm reduction is about working with people regardless of where they are in their process on their substance use, in the hopes of keeping them healthy, keeping them alive, and supporting their path.
And, you know, as you work more in this arena and you know, bring about this approach to when someone is addicted, what kind of reactions do you get? Does everybody jump on board, or have you faced, you know, opposition?
Yeah, the reaction's been changing over the years. When we started, it was very controversial, and we faced some opposition. People asked whether we were encouraging drug use, whether what we were doing ran counter to the just say no message. And I think over the years, people have gotten to recognize and understand that we have a really important reason to protect our loved ones, our families, and communities, no matter what the issue is, whether it's heroin, whether it's fentanyl, whether it's methamphetamine, that people out there are struggling and they need that helping hand. So I wouldn't say that the opposition has gone away, but people are starting to look at these issues in a different light, in part because we've had so much success with naloxone in saving lives. That becomes a very powerful testimony to the power of harm reduction.
And Daniel, a lot of times when we hear about people who are trying to help, they also talk about a needle exchange. Go ahead and define that for me.
Absolutely. A needle exchange program was a concept that came out of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, where we were seeing untold devastation running through communities of people where there was drug injecting, and people were acquiring HIV infection very quickly and potentially spreading it to their loved ones and children. So the concept of the needle exchange was that if HIV and other viruses like hepatitis C are spread because people share syringes, and people share syringes because they don't have a way of obtaining a legal supply, then let's start a needle exchange program where we offer people clean syringes in replacement for used syringes. And that interrupts the spread of HIV, keeps people healthy, and also gives people a chance to ask for other help, ask for help with their health care, ask for help getting into drug treatment. So we've got needle exchange programs in many parts of the country that have been doing fantastic work and protecting their community's health.
Thanks, Daniel. And a lot of times this is where the controversy comes in. You know, there's people out there who feel needle exchange programs or handing out naloxone are enabling addicts. Daniel, each time you hear that, you know, what is running through your mind?
Well, the first thing that runs through my mind is that if I was enabling addicts, I would get out of this business. I wouldn't support anything that made drug use increase, made addiction more severe. I really believe in the power of recovery, and I believe that a needle exchange program can be a good first step. It's actually enabling people who use drugs to take their health into their own hands, to take responsibility in seeking help and getting support. And the stigma that we were talking about earlier has so much to do with why people are traditionally afraid to come forward. A needle exchange program is about meeting people where they're at and supporting them to make healthier choices.
Thanks, Daniel. And we are talking about harm reduction today. That's providing things like clean needles to drug users in order to prevent the spread of HIV or other diseases. And where do you stand on this issue? Call in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Do you think it's a controversy, or does this sound logical and you'd like to hear more people talking about it or even having access to it in your community? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go now to Colorado. We have a caller on the line. We're going to welcome in Bradley, who is in rural Colorado, tuned in on KSUT. Bradley, what would you like to add?
Hi. Yeah, first of all, I want to say a good show, good topic. And then I wanted to comment, I'm Lakota and Lakey, and in Lakota way, of course, we have compassion on our relations, and so anybody that's sick like that, we want to help take care of them. And if that includes helping in that way, intermediately to try to get them off the use of the drug with the needle program, perhaps, I guess, the methadone option, that's good. The big problem that I see that's going on in our reservations, and what my dad used to always tell me, is he said the problem that we got going on is with the institution of these white man laws, our kichitas, our warrior societies, are no longer able to maintain order in our communities. So in the old days, we didn't have appeal after appeal after appeal. If we had people who were these drug dealers in our own communities, we simply got them out of the community. We took care of the situation immediately. Now what's happening is because the way the system's set up, we can't get these individuals out of our community, and then also their families are enabling them. So it's creating chaos. I think a good example is if you guys have ever seen the movie Skins. It really shows the situation that's going on out there. And there's really a movement that's starting to develop on the Lakota reservations among the traditional-minded people, the grassroots people, that we want to return to the old ways, our old systems, so that we can get control of this, because the drugs can't come into our communities. We're so rural. They come into our communities through these intermediaries, our own tribal members that do this to us. So I just wanted to put that out there, and I thank you.
All right, Bradley, thank you for your call. Add to the hour, too, by calling in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Dr. Tailfeathers, our caller Bradley, you know, brings that point home that, you know, this problem, it goes beyond the person who might be addicted, that it's a bigger problem in our communities. Dr. Tailfeathers, you know, what about, you know, getting at the issue of where the drugs are coming from and how it's impacting our communities? Dr. Tailfeather?
Yes, I would agree with what Bradley has to say. We've had a lot of difficulty because the drug dealers are being protected by family, but you know, there are the police have finally started to really move in on on busting some of the dealers in the community, and it's quite a contentious issue because the drugs are actually causing death, and so people in the community are asking for stiffer sentences for drug dealers in the community, and family members are starting to hand over information regarding their family members that are dealing the drugs, because there are a number of families that have lost immediate family members to the drug overdose and have immediate family members who were selling the drugs. And we had an unfortunate incident about 2 weeks ago where a whole family was involved in one family member bringing the drugs in, sharing it with the family, and the two parents had been found overdosed in the morning and left four small children. So the issue has become really contentious and very talked about in the community. It's no longer whispered, but people are getting very angry that this drug hasn't stopped. So the community, I think, is starting to rally behind not protecting those relatives that are bringing the drugs into the community, because we are essentially hurting a lot of small children in the end who don't have their parents around anymore.
And Dr. Tailfeathers, it's devastating to hear how this is impacting your community. And often we hear, you know, from news reports when another life is lost and how, you know, it devastates another community. And I'm wondering, for our listening audience, when an overdose happens, is the dialogue beyond just the person who has lost their life? Do people start thinking about how this connects to the entire community? Do you wish that they did have these kind of conversations? Give us a call. Tell us what you're thinking. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Daniel, we're about to go to break here, but got a minute before we head into it. And, you know, when we think about, you know, when a life is lost, is it important to also think about how this is affecting the community as well?
Of course. It's an important moment for grieving, for coming together. And I think that some of those memorials and rallies that we've seen in different parts of the country have been an important space for people to connect, to heal, and also to look at broader solutions so that this doesn't happen again.
All right. Thanks, Daniel. And we also heard earlier about harm reduction. You know, when you hear, you know, more information on this, do you feel that it reflects, you know, how you were taught, how you were raised, your native ways? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today from New York City is Daniel Raymond, and he is the policy director for the Harm Reduction Coalition. And if you're hearing more about this and you think maybe this might benefit your community, you can call in, talk to Daniel. Definitely, you can ask your questions. All you have to do is give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can even send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We want to know what you think, Native America. We're going to keep these phone lines open because we do want to hear from you. And if it's more comfortable to call in anonymously, we'll take your call too. We'll be back. Living in a food desert means traveling long distances to get fresh, healthy food. That's the reality many tribal citizens face when living in rural communities. Is food accessibility a problem on your tribal nation? Could traditional gardening practices revive the food oasis we once lived in? Join us as we discuss food deserts on the next Native America. We'll be right back.
Sacred Wind Communications education nonprofit, Sacred Wind Community Connect, is a proud sponsor of this program. Sacred Wind provides high school and college scholarships and internet training to areas of the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico, where the parent company provides voice and broadband services. Sacred Wind believes that broadband technologies can reinforce Native cultures and offer other opportunities for self-determination. For more information, log on to sacredwindcommunications.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thank you for joining us today. If you're interested in the shows that are coming up, visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com. You'll find all the details there. You can also sign up for our newsletter by clicking on the Sign Up Now button. And if you missed a show, check out our archive. Again, our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And we've been talking about programs that provide support for people who use drugs. Specifically, we've been looking at needle exchange programs and providing the drug naloxone, which can stop a drug overdose. And does your tribe have a needle exchange program? Many believe needle exchange programs prevent the spread of diseases like HIV and hepatitis C. Others say they enable drug users to keep abusing drugs. Where do you stand? Our phone lines are open, and we want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today from New York City, New York, is Daniel Raymond. He is the Policy Director for the Harm Reduction Coalition. Also with us from Alberta, Canada, is Dr. Esther Tailfeathers, and she is a family and emergency room doctor, and Dr. Tailfeathers is a member of the Blood Tribe. We want to welcome both of them back here to our program. And our phone lines are also open. We want to hear from you, too. What are your thoughts on this? Is this something that you would like to see? Maybe harm reduction coming to your community so that more people are safe. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And this issue has really made headlines recently. Daniel, I want to go ahead and turn our eyes over to Indiana. I know that's where a lot of people are talking and thinking about this issue. Here is Indiana Governor Mike Pence talking about temporarily allowing needle exchanges because of the dramatic spike in HIV infections in Indiana.
For the sole purpose of suppressing the HIV epidemic in Scott County, I have authorized the Scott County Board of Health, through official board action, to submit a request to the Indiana State Health Commissioner for permission to design and administer a limited and focused short-term needle exchange program. Now, I do not enter into this lightly. I do not support needle exchange as anti-drug policy, but this is a public health emergency. And on the recommendation of the Centers for Disease Control, I am authorizing a focused, short-term, limited needle exchange program if local officials deem that to be necessary and appropriate.
And Daniel, you know, we're hearing a lot about this. I've read plenty of headlines on this. A lot of people, you know, are firing at Governor Mike Pence there in Indiana. Why is this such a political issue? Daniel?
Sure. I think it's a hot button issue because of a couple of different dynamics. One is that the HIV outbreak in Indiana, which so far has reached almost 90 infections, is happening in a place in southeastern Indiana that's been hit hard by the prescription painkiller epidemic. Most of these infections have been linked to the injection of Opana, and there's a lot of concerns that if it could happen in southeastern Indiana, it could happen anywhere in the country that we've been seeing rises in painkiller misuse. The second is the concern that Governor Pence is not going far enough, that we don't have any reason to believe that you could just do a quick surgical hit with a short-term needle exchange and clear up your problem. He's resisting the call for deeper solutions, even as he's acknowledging that there's a problem and all of the best science says that needle exchange is the right solution. So he's kind of put himself between a rock and a hard place, trying to hew to the typical conservative opposition to needle exchange while looking out for his citizens and trying to protect the community health.
And is this a headline that you've been watching? You know, what are your own reactions? Have you thought of your own tribal community? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Thanks for that, Daniel. And that's the national scope of what a lot of people are talking about. I want to go ahead and focus in on what is also happening in our tribal communities. And to help us understand more, joining us from Washington State is Chief Mike Lasner, and he is the Chief of Police for the Suquamish Tribe. And Chief Lasner is on the line with us today. Welcome to the hour, Chief Lasner.
Good afternoon, and welcome.
Great to have you on the line. And Chief Lasner, you know, we heard a little bit about how this is happening nationally. People are talking about it, better way to say it. And tell us more, you know, focus us in on the community that you're connected to and why this is an issue and what people are doing about it.
Well, opioid addiction and overdoses are a huge issue for us, just like they are across the nation. It's one of the prime drivers of illegal activity in our reservation and all the surrounding communities. And of course, we're also suffering from the epidemic of overdoses, and that led to us recently deciding to issue naloxone to our police officers.
And how was that received by the community?
The issue was floated a year or two ago, and there was quite a bit of resistance to issuing it to the broader community. But basically, we've kind of been the trailblazers on that, and we issued it a little less than 2 weeks ago, and we already saved one life with it last Friday. So the resistance is starting to crumble.
And Chief Lasner, tell me about last Friday. You know, this program came in, more people are being educated about it. But when you know this effort has been able to save a life, you know, how does that make you feel?
Makes me feel pretty darn good. You know, in law enforcement, our top priority, of course, is always saving lives. You know, if there was a major disaster and, you know, hundreds of people were injured, we would certainly drop, you know, writing parking tickets and all the lower priorities and go to life-saving. Well, that's exactly the situation that we're in with these opioid overdoses. People are dying. We need to treat it like the, you know, the imminent threat that it is and reset our priorities. And our priorities are, as they always have been and should be, saving lives. And that's why we're going with naloxone.
And Chief Lasner, you know, when this decision was made to move forward with this, what were the hopes?
Obviously, it's not a solution to the problems, but, you know, our hope is to not lose a community member. I've been in Indian country for 16 years, but I've had the good fortune to serve my current tribe for 10 years. And some of the people I was chasing 10 years ago are now our best and brightest and the leaders of our community and people that are looked up to and are leading our youth groups. So we don't want to lose them. You know, we can get them back. We can get them healthy again and, you know, put them back where they belong, leading our community in a healthy direction. So if we can save one life, one person that will, you know, eventually quit using opioids and get back on track, you know, that's the future of our tribe, and we're not willing to turn our back on it.
So is all of this about treatment? That's what I'm wondering. What do you think? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to our phone lines. We have Tom in Las Vegas, New Mexico. He's tuned in on KUNM. And Tom, you have a question for us.
Yes, I do. Well, first I want to say, you know, I listen to the show all the time. I love it. And it's good that we're having programs that show compassion and empathy rather than punishment for people that have problems, drug problems or any problem. And my question is, okay, so Naloxone? Okay, it's an opiate blocker, is it? Can you have somebody explain exactly how that stops an overdose?
Thanks for that question, Tom. They're in Las Vegas. And if you have a question, too, call us right now. There's plenty of time left in the hour. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Dr. Tailfeathers, please help us with that.
What happens with the naloxone is it it actually covers the pain receptors that are absorbing the opioid, and it blocks the receptors. So any receptors, I mean, any opioids that are free within between the nerves actually cannot,
attached to the receptors, so it basically blocks the opioid from being active, and the patient usually recovers for a short period of time. If it's a really heavy overdose, they'll recover within about 2 to 3 minutes. You'll start seeing recovery, and they'll start breathing again on their own, but you have to get them to an emergency room anyway, because if it's a heavy overdose, the naloxone will only work for a few minutes. So it's not the end-all, but it will save the life long enough to get them to the emergency room.
And what forms does it come in? Are there different, is it a needle? Is it a spray? Or how would you say?
It's a needle, and it would be really nice if they could produce a naloxone injection device like they have for the epinephrine with people that have allergies. Because what we have now is people have to draw up the naloxone from a vial, a glass vial, and administer it through a regular syringe. But if we had a device that was active and you could just activate it and then just push it right through the clothing, that would be much faster. And I think it would be much more comfortable for people who are not medical to administer. But so far we just have a kit that we put together ourselves.
All right. Thanks for that, Dr. Tailfeathers. Tom, also thank you for your question. Let's go ahead and go to Santa Fe, New Mexico now. Tuned in on KUNM, we have Jan. Jan, welcome to the hour.
Thank you. I love your program.
Thanks.
I wanted to make a comment about the topic at hand. It's a slightly different part of it, but I'm a psychotherapist and I know a lot about these issues. And I wanted to just mention baclofen, because this is an old, safe medicine that has been used for spastics for decades, but it seems to reduce and eliminate craving for all addictions, whether it's heroin or cigarettes or alcohol. It is now, baclofen is now legal in the United States to be used in alcoholism, and they're studying it in Amsterdam to be able to use it for other addictions as well, but it's already available and it already works for addictions. It's just that psychiatrists are opposed to it, I suppose because the patent has run out. It's such an old, safe drug, but there are no negative side effects that they've been able to find other than slight drowsiness. And baclofen will reduce the craving for many of these addictions, but people just don't know about it.
All right, let's go ahead and ask Daniel. Daniel, what do you know about this?
It's interesting. I was just reading something about this very recently, and I'm looking forward to learning more. We do have some medications that have been approved to treat opioid addiction, whether that's from painkillers or from heroin, and those include methadone, buprenorphine or suboxone, and Vivitrol or naltrexone. However, they haven't been put into sufficiently wide use. They're not accessed enough. And so I think that we need to look at all possible options that can help people, recognizing that people will have different routes and different paths to recovery.
Thanks, Daniel. And Jan, thank you for your call there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And you can also join us in this conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you're running to the other room, our number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Give us a ring. Daniel, when we think about administering naloxone, this is another pushback that people who are opposed to this, they also say that this could enable people to not go to the emergency room because they feel they've saved the life and then they don't report it. What do you think about that?
In our training programs, we always advise people to call for help and seek emergency help. And I'll just mention that we've got a lot of information about overdose prevention and naloxone on our website at www.harmreduction.org. But I will say that the most important thing is to stay with somebody, because over the hour or two after you've reversed an overdose, you want to make sure that somebody is safe, that they don't end up using more drugs and go back into that overdose state. So we think that there's going to be a portion of people who don't call 911, but they might not have called 911 in the first place. And the net result is that it seems to be that with or without going to the emergency department, we're saving lives. There's definitely going to be some people who need more intensive help, But the most important thing is to have the naloxone handy at that moment when you can intervene.
Thanks, Daniel. And our phone lines are open. I'd also like to hear from folks maybe who are coming to us from the recovery community. How do you feel about this topic? What about needle exchange programs or handing out naloxone? Do you think that this is something that you wish more people knew about? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and go to our phone lines now. We have a caller in Loop, Arizona, tuned in on KUYI. Line 3 caller, you're on air.
Hi, I was just calling because I had a question to do with the Indian Health Service. I'm a recovering opioid addict for 3 years, and currently I have to go.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Let's try it one more time. I didn't hear you. All right. Call back caller there in Loop, Arizona. We want to hear your question. We got folks on the line who can also comment on it. 1-800-996-2848. And Chief Lasner, I wanted to toss that to you as well. A lot of people might feel, we want to help save the life and, but sometimes, that fear of, well, if we're calling the cops in, then they're going to start looking at us. What is your police department doing to alleviate this, or have you even changed the rules?
We have changed the rules, and actually Washington State has passed a law that if you call 911 to report a overdose, basically you will not be charged with, the possession of those drugs. We want people to call 911. Again, our priority is saving lives. Enforcing the law and getting people treatment are certainly critical downrange, but if they're dead, they can't go to treatment. So really, it's a matter of priorities. And so that's how both our tribe and the state of Washington have dealt with it. The people that overdosed last Friday, they got appropriate medical treatment, and there will be no, criminal follow-up because they called 911. And if you don't call 911 and somebody dies, you could end up with a negligent homicide charge. So really the smart thing to do is call 911.
All right. Thanks, Chief Lasner. And have things change in your community as well? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and hear from Brandon, who is here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. And Brandon, what are you seeing?
Hi. So I used to work for Needle Exchange in Albuquerque, and we actually had naloxone on hand all the time, but it wasn't actually in the needle form. It was actually in a really easy dose that it's an atomizer, and it's a real simple process. And actually, people who are currently users could get a prescription to this and for free, and they just go through a small training on how to use it. And the atomizer works by, it's not a needle that you have to inject in somebody, but you just put on this lid and you put up half of the dose in one nostril, half the other dose in the other nostril, and it'll take somebody. It's a full dose of naloxone or Narcan. So I just wanted to mention that because I think it's a real easy and very accessible way that, even citizens, parents of users or friends of users can carry this and get a prescription to it and save lives themselves as well.
All right, Brandon, thank you for your call there or here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Dr. Tailfeathers, we're hearing of another form. Is this something that maybe you also have on the table, too, of maybe bringing to your community?
Well, this is the first time I've heard of it, so that's really good that I was able to participate in your program. And we certainly will talk with the team that I'm working with and see what we can do. We're actually the first community in Alberta to roll this out because we've had all these questions about harm reduction and enabling. But now the province is behind us, so we may be able to move into using something easier like the atomizer. Sounds like a great product.
All right. Thank you, Brandon. We got another caller on the line, an anonymous caller in Alaska. Caller, welcome to our hour, and I understand you got a question.
Yeah, I was curious what opportunities that are available to people for counseling that come in here, because it seems like when people are coming in to use or exchange needles in a safe environment, you have the prime opportunity for counseling or even maybe a spiritual advisor or someone who can not just help save a life but actually maybe redeem that life out of the lifestyle. And is that being made available or being looked into?
All right, caller, thank you. That's a great observation. Daniel, is this about also getting people more help?
Absolutely. One thing that I learned quickly when I first started working in a needle exchange program was that I ended up spending more time listening and counseling and making referrals than I did handing out needles. And I think that's the powerful thing. People come to you for the needles, but once you've built that trust, they'll open up to you and share their pain, their struggle, and their search for help. So the counseling ends up being a central function of a good needle exchange program.
And Daniel, a lot of our tribal communities, you know, we're small communities. Any advice for folks, you know, who want to seek help, or maybe some of the folks who are helping people out there? You know, how do we deal with this when we're in a small town? Everybody knows what's going on, but people still need help.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the first things that any community could do, including a small community, is to have a really upfront conversation about the shame and the stigma that's holding people back from asking for help, and figure out ways to have a trusted elder who can be that person that you can confide in, and that source of somebody to listen to you and guide you and steer you in the right direction.
Thanks, Daniel. And Dr. Tailfeathers, I'd like to hear from you, too. You know, how much of this is also about getting folks into treatment?
We're working really hard right now at adapting some of the programs that we have and getting a lot of our frontline workers trained in opioid addiction and prescription drug abuse, because it traditionally has been alcohol, and now our community has completely switched to opioid and prescription drug abuse. So we really need to get our own people educated and trained in how to deal with this. We are seeing, you know, a lot of the community talking about what needs to be changed in our community, and of course the socioeconomic reasons for our people, you know, falling toward opioid addiction.
All right, thanks for that. And Dr. Tailfeathers, we do appreciate you joining us and sharing great information. If there are folks who still have questions out there, please do send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's take Michael in Spokane, Washington. He's tuned in on KSFC. Michael, what do you think?
Hello. I was calling. I was inquiring about some information. I own a medical marijuana dispensary here in Cheney, Washington, outside of Spokane, and I have dealt with a lot of patients coming in dealing with opioid addiction and looking for alternative ways. And I know I've been working on trying to decipher through all the new medicines that have been being made with marijuana and using that to try and actually help a lot of these patients. And so right now I've been doing a lot of different regimens trying to find different, I guess, products that utilize marijuana, and it's an easier way to kind of reduce the coming off of it. But I'm trying to figure out if there's any information out there that has looked in towards that side of medicine. And I know it's relatively new in the States, and I know in the natives they've been allowed to utilize that across, I think, the nation based upon what I've read. And I'm just curious if there's any information that's following up on using that for opioid reduction.
All right, Michael, thank you for your call there in Spokane, Washington. Daniel, what about introducing marijuana as another therapy?
I have to say that I'm not aware of any research that's been done on whether marijuana can ease treatment and recovery for opioid addiction. That doesn't mean that it might not have a role. I just haven't seen any research along those lines, though I was recently reading a study that indicated that adding a small dose of clonidine to somebody who's going on buprenorphine to treat their opioid addiction can be helpful. And the role of clonidine seems to be to manage some of the anxiety around craving and withdrawal symptoms. So I think it's possible to think about different kinds of strategies to help with the craving and withdrawal, whether that's pharmaceutical, medicinal, or other kinds of practices like meditation.
And I'm sure, you know, we also have to consider the legal side of bringing that into question, too. Dr. Tailfeathers, anything to add to our caller?
No, I would completely agree with Daniel. I think that, you know, trying things that do help, combining alternative medication helps a lot. And, you know, the goal would be to get a person as clean as possible and functional and living happily with their family. That would be the goal, I think, that we're trying to achieve.
And Dr. Tailfeathers, do you hope that more tribes are encouraged, you know, through the efforts that you're doing there in your community to also maybe even take a look at this approach, you know, to save more lives?
Yeah, certainly, because there's so much trauma in Native communities, and we've got the intergenerational trauma and just so many sad people that, you know, losing more lives doesn't help any of us, and saving the lives helps at least give our communities hope for a better future.
All right, thanks. And Chief Lasner, you know, same question. Do you hope that more people are encouraged to maybe take these approaches?
I would certainly hope so. I just kind of have three quick closing points for the people that are still opposed to this. If you don't have a needle exchange, your streets are going to be littered with used needles, like ours are. We don't have one. There's used needles everywhere. We're out picking them up all the time. And, of course, children can stumble across those, and that's a recipe for disaster. If you have naloxone, you're not doing CPR for 10 minutes on somebody. You know, you can basically bring them out of the overdose, and, you know, if they stop breathing, you can bring them out within a minute or two. And for the people that still aren't convinced, you know, this heroin and this stuff's in our community. Children are going to come across it. They're going to use it. If nothing else, you should have naloxone to help save a child.
All right. Thank you, Chief Lasner, for joining us today. Also, thanks to Daniel Raymond and Dr. Esther Tailfeathers for being our guest today. And we are back again tomorrow with the show on food deserts. And if you have accessibility problems to getting healthy food in your community, call in and tell us about it tomorrow. Our interim executive producer is Tristan Autone. Monica Brain is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Stephen Emmons is our engineer. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving. The organizations included on NativeGiving.org are developing strength-based solutions to ensure the health and well-being of our most valuable resource, our children.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on how you can partner with successful innovations at NativeGiving.org.
Waka. Even if you get services from IHS, you might need to claim an Indian exemption for the 2014 tax year. Use Form 8965 when you file your income taxes. Find Part 3, enter Code E, and check a full year. Call 1-800-318-2596 or visit healthcare.gov/tribal. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.